Looks like we have all the parties and judges present, so if the marshal introduce the panel, please proceed.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Sleater, Judge Gaitas, Judge Smith, the Honorable Randall Sleater presiding.
And good morning. Welcome to the virtual Court of Appeals for October 14. This is the first of two oral matters we have this morning, and then we have three non-oral matters as well. I'll identify the first case and then make a few preliminary comments. The matter is file A20-0434 that we will now consider Madison Equities, Inc. et al. As appellants versus the Office of Attorney General as respondent. And as both counsel, I presume, can see, we have a clock in one of the boxes. And so that's the main difference that you'll notice today from being live, is that will dictate the 15 minutes for appellant, 15 minutes for respondent, and 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please do introduce yourself for the record when you begin the proceeding, if at any time, or when you begin your comments, I should say. If at any time we lose connection, then we will instruct the marshal to stop the clock and wait until we've reconnected with you successfully, especially as to the audio. And I see that you both have yourselves muted right now, and that's good if you can maintain that when you're not speaking, and the judges will try to do the same thing. It seems to aid a bit in terms of the audio clarity as well. Also, for both the parties and any guests who are taking part in this virtual oral argument, that no recording is allowed other than what we would do record at the, and the recording will be available on the judicial website within 24 hours for all to consider. Other than that, I think we're ready to proceed. For counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. May I please the court and counsel? My name is Kelly Haddock, and I represent the appellants in this particular matter. Just to start off, just want to give a theme to this. This is where the Attorney General's office, in our view, was given an inch of information from a disgruntled employee that was connected with the union, that my client, they were trying to get my client to unionize, and was provided some information, whether it was ever verified by the Attorney General's office or not. We don't know at this point in time. But what we do know is that the Attorney General's office has now taken that information into what I call a mile. And it's that mile where we have a problem in this particular case, because under Minnesota Statute 8.31, in the Attorney General's and the District Court's view, it has no limits given the decision that was issued. Our view is Section 8.31 does prescribe limits in terms of what the Attorney General can investigate pursuant to a civil investigation demand. It comes from just the plain language of the statute, Your Honors, with respect to what limits exist. There
Mr.
must
Mr. Haddock, can I just inquire preliminarily, kind of following up on that point you just made, if I read your argument correctly, and it might be different, I'm not sure, from the position you took at the district court, that that your client no longer objects to four companies, the CID as it relates to four companies, Madison Equities and the three other companies that I believe it's undisputed made payments to the individuals who complain. Number one, am I correct about that? And number two, if that's the case, could you in a succinct fashion explain what the difference is, why you believe there's reasonable grounds as to those four and therefore no longer object, but is no longer, or there is no reasonable grounds as to the other, there's six of 10, there's two different numbers, the first 10, a group of 10, and then there's another 30, if I understand approximately. Can you make that distinction for us, please?
Yes, thank you, Judge. Very good questions. And I do believe you are correct in part. And I say in part with respect to being correct about whether we agree to produce information with respect to those four entities, because all part of our appeal relates to the joint employer doctrine, which we believe is a threshold issue that needs to be decided before the Attorney General is allowed to investigate these things that they claim they have reasonable basis to investigate. With respect to those four entities, Your Honor, which is Madison Equities, First Bank Building LLC, Alliance Center LLC, and also U.S. Bank Center LLC. If you look at all of the complainants that Mr. Moeller put forth in his affidavit in terms of what they told him, it is those four entities that come into play. Only three of those entities, if you look at the affidavit of Ms. Corkard, even employed security guards. But there was some information provided by one of the complainants that he also worked at U.S. Bank Center LLC. With respect to the remaining entities that are listed in the CID, Your Honors, 375 Jackson Corley LLC, you won't find any information anywhere that any of the complainants ever said they were employed by this entity. And I say employed because that's a very important term, because if we look at the CID, the AG's office says the reasonable basis is to believe that all of these clients potentially violated some state wage laws. And for that to occur, there has to be an employer-employee relationship. Like, same thing with 375 Jackson Willow LLC. You won't find any information relating to that entity. Same thing with Lowry Building and Park Square and Stadium Ramp. All of those things is going back to the mile that I said at the beginning of my argument, Your Honor. It's those things that, where is the reasonable basis that has to be specified under 8.31 for the Attorney General's office to go into the private affairs of private companies? And that's where, when we talk about the four entities, I believe you are correct. And we did tell that to the district court as well, that you should limit it to those four entities if that's what their reasonable basis is from the complainants that came forward allegedly to the Attorney General's office.
Could you just clarify then what, or specify if you can, why you concede there's reasonable grounds as to those four entities, but not as to the rest?
Well, my client doesn't want to be super difficult here, Your Honor, because remember, this is just the investigation part. There has been no claim that's been alleged, even though it appears that the Attorney General office acts as if they've already have enough information to bring a cause of action, but they have not done so yet. And I say that because they use this inflammatory language within their briefs of schemes and whistleblowers and all this other language that appears like they believe they already have enough information against my client. That's just not the case. There is information from security guards that came forward and claimed that they weren't paid appropriate overtime pay. And that information relates to the fact, according to Mr. Moeller, that you have to add all these businesses together, even though they're separate. If somebody worked 40 hours for one entity and 40 hours for another entity in a given 2-week period, you would have to add those together just because my client may or may not have common ownership of those different businesses. Which leads me to my second point in terms of the joint employer doctrine, Your Honor, which we believe is the threshold issue that needs to be decided in this particular matter before the AG's office can go forward with any type of an investigation. And the case of the Minnesota.
Can I just clarify that? Because I want to just make sure I'm understanding. You're separating, though, the four. You're conceding there's reasonable grounds, regardless of a decision regarding joint employer as to the four. Now you're referring to the other six and maybe other 36. Again, the numbers I've seen. Let's just say all other companies. Am I correct about that distinction?
Yeah, I think that's right. With respect to the four. We're saying we don't want to be difficult. We still don't believe there's a reasonable basis for it, but we've always said, with even to the district court, we'll provide that information with respect to those four, just because we want to cooperate throughout this entire process. And I've told Mr. Moeller that, but it's beyond those four where the issues come about, because where's the reasonable basis to even look at any of that information? We're saying that in a matter of cooperation. I still have significant issues with the fact that the Attorney General's office believes there's a reasonable basis even with respect to those four. Because with respect to one of the individuals, there's a current lawsuit that my client has against that particular person for defamation, as well as the union that was involved trying to get into my client's businesses. We don't know if he was a mole put in there or not, but there's certainly suspicions that that has occurred. But obviously there's the discovery has not went forward yet on that particular matter.
Can I inquire? That reminded me, I see our court special term had reversed and remanded, at least in part, a denial of a stay request. And I haven't seen that there's been any results of that. I guess I'm getting to the four you're referring to. Has discovery started voluntarily? Did the court modify or change the position, or did the parties agree to hold off until this court ruled?
Yeah, thanks, Your Honor. No, I wish we could have got the Attorney General's office to cooperate and come to some agreement, but they fought it tooth and nail. So the parties submitted additional briefs to the district court on whether a stay was appropriate, and the district court has not yet issued a decision following the remand.
But if I understand your comments today correctly, you're willing today to begin the discovery process as to the four. And that continues to be your client's position.
Well, that's in part, Your Honor, but I got to get to the second part of this threshold issue that should be decided by the district court before there's an opportunity for the CID to be enforced. And that relates to the joint employer doctrine. And the case of the Minnesota Twins versus the state of Minnesota is very important in this regard. And the facts are very analogous to this particular case. There, the Attorney General, the Minnesota Twins were apparently looking to move and sell the team. This goes back into the 1990s. Ultimately, the Attorney General got involved and issued a CID with respect to alleged violations of antitrust laws. The Twins claimed they were exempt from the antitrust laws. And so the issue that the court had to look at was whether the exemption issue was, if that was a threshold issue that had to be decided first before the Attorney General could go ahead and look at the CID and whether it could be enforced. And in that particular case, the district court ultimately did say that that is a threshold issue that has to be decided before we're going to look at the enforcement of the CID.
Can I just ask, with regard to the joint employer doctrine, though, which I see as a little different than the exemption that is involved in that Twins case, isn't the discovery necessary to determine whether that doctrine even applies here? In other words, aren't you essentially creating an impossible burden for the Attorney General's office by characterizing that as a threshold issue?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, with respect to that particular issue. They could certainly narrow the discovery and tailor it for discovery on the joint employer doctrine. If that's what their claim is, and I go back to the reasonable basis. They claim the reasonable basis exists for a violation of the wage laws. If they're going to, their investigation has to potentially lead to a claim under the Minnesota Twins case. And if the joint employer doctrine doesn't exist, they have no claim. Even Mr. Moeller says that within the affidavits. They have to add these hours together between multiple employers to come up with any type of wage violation. So that is a threshold issue, which I believe is nearly identical to the threshold issue in the Minnesota Twins case, which ultimately the Supreme Court said the Twins were exempt and therefore you could not enforce the CID, and the district court erred when they enforced the CID. It's the same situation here, where if they cannot establish that the joint employer doctrine, number one, even applies in Minnesota under a wage theft laws, and number two, does it apply in this particular situation to my clients, that if they can't establish those two things, there cannot necessarily lead to any particular charge against my clients. And that's where we say the Minnesota Twins case is entirely on point with how this court should look at that joint employer issue.
And Mr. Haydock, isn't the distinction or the equivalence would be if your client was disputing the overtime laws as in the Twins case, the question was whether the antitrust law even applied to Major League Baseball in the same way that that it did non-professional sports. I'm a little at a loss to understand the analogy there. I'm assuming your client does not dispute the laws that are being alleged. Your client disputes whether it actually occurred and which companies, if any, had committed it. So that gets to the scope. Don't we have in this case factual allegations from the complainants, which, and again, that's why I'm asking about the distinction of the four versus the others. They talked about a common supervisor and working at the three other locations and getting, or I guess it was more than that, but getting paid by three other companies. Wouldn't that, at least on its face for those four, provide a reasonable grounds to investigate the allegations?
Thank you, Your Honor. We do dispute the applicability of the joint employer doctrine, which is very similar to the Minnesota Twins case when there was a dispute to whether the exemption applied or not. And number two, let's go back to, it has to be reasonable basis. I'll take a simple example, and I see my time is running out. I own a lawn company and I employ somebody. I go mow lawn A, and then I go have that employee go mow Walgreens, and that employee comes to the attorney general and says, I worked at Walgreens, but I didn't get paid by Walgreens. Is that a reasonable basis to now go investigate 10 different entities? That's exactly the situation that we have here. They obviously didn't do their homework when they were looking at reasonable basis. Reasonable does have a meaning. And I can tell you with respect to companies that my client owns, commercial buildings, a lot of time are managed by management companies. Management companies have their own security guards that they put in all kinds of different buildings. That doesn't mean the building that they're working in is the one that's making the payment, but that's what they're basing their reasonable basis on. And it's interesting that within all of the affidavits Mr. Moeller provided, he doesn't say anything about them asking those types of questions. which there's certainly a lot there. And I see my time has run out, Your Honors.
And of course, you'll have 5 minutes rebuttal. Thank you, Mr. Haydock. And Mr.
Thank
Moeller,
you
may proceed.
My name is Jonathan Moeller for the Minnesota Attorney General, Keith Ellison. May it please the court, counsel. What's at stake in this case is the Minnesota Attorney General's ability to effectively investigate civil wage theft in Minnesota. The Attorney General has had the authority to engage in pre-suit investigations of illegal activities or alleged illegal activities under some version of Section 8.31 since 1967. In order to do so, on reasonable grounds. And the Minnesota Supreme Court detailed what constitutes reasonable grounds in the case Cone v. State by Humphrey. And that case distinguished an investigation from a lawsuit and established the public policy that the state investigate before initiating a lawsuit so that the state isn't in the position of suing out bare bones complaints.
Mr. Moeller, can I just interrupt you? I get the impression there's no dispute of the authority of the Attorney General if the facts present itself, but whether the facts here present itself and the scope seems to be the issue. Can I just clarify for you, maybe following up the same question I have for Mr. Haydock, isn't it not true that at least as to, and I'm continuing to somewhat separate the four because I got the impression that appellant's counsel did as well, because you have employees of Madison Equities who complained, six of them, I believe, that as part of what they claim is overtime involved three other companies who paid them. So would you agree that the potential law violation that would be investigated involved those four based on the information that you have? You have no other information on any other company that Madison Equities may be somehow affiliated with. You have information on those four. And I'm tying in the Cone case that you're referring to. That seems to set the standard, and I'm reading from Cone, but for the purpose of the discovery, is to ascertain if there's any substance to the consumer complaints from the party who is perhaps in the best position to know, the party against whom the complaint is made. So the point being is consistent with that, just like in that case, you have specific complaints that allege the involvement of four companies. Am I correct in that summary?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, let me start by correcting the record a little bit. Madison Equities has not ever said that they're willing to provide us with any information. So what Mr. Haddock said is incorrect there. We have allegations from employees that they worked at a number of different properties. They were paid by at least four. We don't know if they worked at or were paid by more, or if other employees were shared between the companies. We have one employee.
That means, can I just clarify that? Maybe I misunderstood what I was reading. They've alleged and shown, at least one of them showed pay stubs of these other three companies in addition to Madison Equity. So you have no information in terms of any evidence they've been paid by any other of the, I'll call 36 companies that apparently are alleged to be affiliated. Am I correct in that?
Yes, Your Honor. We have pay stubs from the four companies. We also have an employee who alleged that he was paid at one point for security guard work by a restaurant, and that he knew that maintenance workers were being paid in the same way. So the state is trying to just ascertain if other security guards were paid by other companies and if other classes of employees were shared. If Madison Equities or the other companies—
Can I ask, Mr. Mueller, though, and again, I'm looking at the Cohen case, or using the analogy, have you received any complaints from any other class of employees and involving any other companies? Would that not be necessary to say or to demonstrate a reasonable grounds? I assume, in other words, number one, we'll start with a legal proposition that companies per se are separate entities. And number two, until you get a complaint like you did here, you don't investigate companies as to potential law violations. Am I correct in that summary?
Well, Your Honor, we have complaints that Madison Equities controls these employees, that they work for different at different properties and were paid by different companies. We have one of the employees who said that maintenance workers were paid in the same way. We have an employee paid by a restaurant for the same type of work. And our CID asked for a much different amount of information from these different companies just to see if there is a potential legal violation. The only thing we ask of the other companies is if they shared workers.
But can I, you use the phrase to see if there's a law violation. Isn't that precisely an opposite to the authority the Attorney General's given in order, in other words, you have the authority by the statute when there's a reasonable grounds there is a violation. And I understand that that's what these six, you're basing it on these six employees involving those four companies, but would not expanding that beyond that to see if there's a violation be precisely the sort of fishing expedition that would not be allowed by this sort of discovery any more than a post lawsuit type of discovery?
Well, Your Honor, because of the lack of risk in pretty companies, it's unclear to us how they're related. For example, we have one employee who said that they worked 80 hours per week at just the First Bank building, but that they were paid by both First Bank building and by U.S. Bank Center. The Attorney General's position is that he has the reasonable grounds to ask the limited amount of information from these other companies, just in terms of whether they shared workers.
Can I just ask, would anything prevent you, Mr. Mueller, from preparing a subsequent CID if during the course of the discovery that you obtain about the four entities, you obtain additional information suggesting that these additional companies or affiliates are somehow involved here?
Your Honor, the state could issue a supplementary CID and information we have, we think we've asked reasonable questions. If we receive information that these companies have shared workers without paying them, or if the workers are shared without being hired separately, then we could, the state could issue a more robust supplementary CID. But the current CID, the initial CID, was tailored to ask for more information regarding the security guard workers. And we have allegations already that there is a scheme to prevent these employees from being paid. Our position is we could have asked for just general information about the workers being employed by Madison Equities. We have information about maintenance. We have security guard workers. Our initial CID was generally limited to security guard workers and asked a limited amount of information just to see if a robust CID should be issued. But we do have this allegation of this pattern in practice of evading overtime wages by Madison Equities. And at this point, it's unclear to us who Madison Equities controls. I mean, there's Madison Equities has its own website where it lists this exhaustive list of properties and companies and restaurants, but the state asks for just a limited amount of information for the most part for the companies and for the companies associated with properties where we know security guards worked, and just a limited amount of information about other businesses to see if the investigation should expand.
Mr. Mueller, just to follow up on that, would it also not be true? Let's assume that the CID is limited to these four and you begin the investigation. And it sounds like from what you just said orally, you already have some information. I think you used the phrase scheme, and of course, Haydock was objecting to some of that language already. Once you commence a lawsuit, then you'll do additional discovery, and that too would be give you an alternative or information, I suspect, given a actual lawsuit, to then expand even further. Would that be correct?
But Your Honor, the public policy in Cone is to allow the state to investigate before initiating a lawsuit, before opening things up.
I'm trying to hone down the distinction between the reasonable grounds of the four companies versus wanting to find out whether they're connected, how they're connected, because you don't have, if I understand, other complaints regarding other companies that may be affiliated. And so you're asking to get information of affiliation without evidence that whether or not they're affiliated, that there's been law violations as to those other companies. But you do have it, if I understand correctly, as to these four. And so I'm just following up what Judge Gaetis is referring to, either as a supplemental CID once you start the investigation and or post lawsuit as to these four companies.
Well, Your Honor, we know that Madison Equities is sharing employees with, I think, First Bank Building, U.S. Bank Center, Alliance Center, LLC. The only thing we're asking is whether they're sharing employees with other companies so that we can determine the extent of the issue if this is the alleged scheme.
Can I just inquire, though, you've used that phrase a number of times, would you agree that sharing employees in and of itself without knowing more information would not be evidence of a law violation?
But Your Honor, the complaints we have about security guards, that this pattern of paying employees could extend to other types of workers. There's no logical reason that if they're sharing security guard workers and paying them under separate LLCs in order to avoid paying overtime wages, that wouldn't be happening to other workers.
I suspect, and I'm just trying to get a handle on the CID standard from the statute, that may very well be a fair inference, but would it again not be the case? You only have complaints from these six security guards involving these four companies. And so that's, I'm assuming, is the purpose of the statute, is to investigate that. And that's when you might find out that that's just the tip of the iceberg, but that's why the Attorney General has that authority, but not beyond that authority. Would that be an accurate summary?
Your Honor, what we know is the tip of the iceberg, but if we're not allowed to inquire whether Madison Equities shared employees with other companies that it owned, it will be difficult for the state to discover any more of the iceberg. And this is where we get to the joint employer doctrine. And under, it's much more well-established under federal law than Minnesota law, but the Labor Standards Act is worded very similarly to the Federal Fair Labor Standard Act with regard to the definition of employer. Under the Minnesota Fair Labor Standards Act, the definition of employer is any individual, partnership, association, corporation, business trust, any person or group of persons acting directly or indirectly in the interest of an employer in relation to an employee. And it's been fleshed out enough in the federal FLSA that there's actually rules describing joint employer liability. And it includes if there's an arrangement between two employers to share an employee services. And this is 29 CFR 791.2E. It says that separate employers are considered joint if there's an agreement to share services, if one employer is acting directly or indirectly in the interest of another employer in relation to an employee, or if there is shared control of the employee, the reason of the fact that one employer controls, is controlled by, or is under common control with the other employer. The state has ample reasonable grounds to make the limited inquiry that we have based on the complaints and allegations from the six employees that we've heard from already, to ask this limited question from Madison Equities and the other associated companies, just whether employees are shared. At that point, we can talk to the employees and figure out, okay, was this did you apply separately? Did you, were you shared willy-nilly between the two companies? But without the limited amount of information that we're asking for, it'll be impossible for the state to find out that information and to make that distinction.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. I want to note we had a couple of times where your video was not quite matching your audio, but I think we were able to hear most of the audio even when there was a little bit of a freeze up. At least that's what I noticed, so I appreciate that. And Mr. Haydock, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Again, Kelly Haddock for the appellants. Everything I heard from the argument of Mr. Mueller is the Attorney General has zero limits to what it can investigate. It can get a complaint from a security guard, and it can go investigate maintenance workers. Where does it end? Could be every person in the office in the building. Why don't they go investigate? Because they had a complaint related to that building. And again, I continue to go back, and similar to what I did in the district court, is there has to be a reasonable basis. Your Honor asked the question, were there any other complaints from any other class of employee? And Mr. Mueller sidestepped that question, but the answer is no. The only thing that it ever came from was security guards. Why don't they investigate security guards if that's the case? I also hear that they're asking for limited information. Your Honors, read the CID. It asks for voluminous information, including interrogatory number 17, where the district court even noted that there's upwards of 40 entities. It also asks for personal residences of my clients that they believe have an ownership interest in some of these entities. This is far beyond any type of limited information that Mr. Mueller refers to. He also said, let me ask for all this stuff. And then hopefully I can then expand the investigation. Well, maybe, but to be able to expand an investigation, you better at first only be asking about stuff that you have a reasonable basis to ask for.
Mr. Haddock, could I inquire the hypothetical, which of course your client hopes doesn't happen, but let's assume number one, the CID as to the four is allowed, and number two, that the Attorney General has a basis to initiate a civil action. Would you agree that at that point, through the normal discovery there, that indeed some, at least, of the relevance as to other companies may become important, especially if there appears to be, through the usual discovery of the four, a tie with those?
Yeah, it's a difficult question to respond to, Your Honor, because obviously discovery can take us in all sorts of different directions. So I suppose that there's a possibility that some they could obtain some reasonable basis to go investigate some additional entities along the way. That's certainly a possibility. But as it stands now in the record before this particular court, there is no reasonable basis to go beyond those four entities that we've been discussing today. And I think, Your Honor, asked a great question of could they issue a supplemental CID at a later point in time? And the answer was yes, they certainly could. And I do agree with that as this thing progresses to the extent the state wants to continue with their fishing expedition here.
Would you agree that the threshold for discovery is pretty low? You don't need a whole lot to ask for discovery?
Well, I don't know if low is the right word, Judge. The section 8.31 uses the word relevant. I know some of the cases allude to the fact that we should look at this more from the litigation stage, but this is not litigation. This is an investigation. So that word relevant within section 8.31 has meaning. Does it go as far as the discovery where I can ask anything if it has the possibility of leading to the discovery of admissible evidence? I think it's a higher threshold than that if we read 8.31, especially in the context of a government and the state coming in and asking and demanding private information of private businesses and private individuals, which is exactly why 8.31 prescribes limits in terms of what the government can request, which is different from how the state has been arguing this, is this gives us broad authority to go do whatever we want, which is not the case under section 8.31.
Given the standard of review, abuse of discretion, how did the district court abuse their discretion given the threshold question of whether there's a reasonable basis?
Yeah, the district court didn't give any analysis with respect to any of these entities beyond the four. And number two, the district court abuses discretion by not even considering the threshold issue that the state would have to establish before there would be any type of claim against my particular clients, which again goes back to the Minnesota Twins case.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And our clock did run out. Mr. Haddock, was there any final statement you wanted to make?
No, thank you, Your Honors. We're just looking in terms of the relief is the determination that the district court erred with respect to its decisions. We would move to, again, that the district court and the district court quash the CID in its entirety. If the Attorney General's office then wants to go back and narrowly tailor the CID to investigate issues of the joint employer doctrine and try to establish that, then they should go do that once this CID is quashed, because this CID goes far beyond what is a reasonable basis under 8.31.
Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate the answers you've had to our questions this morning and the briefing on this matter. We will be taking the matter under advisement and issuing the order in the statutory time period of 90 days. Thank you both. Have a good day.
Thank you, Your Honors.